We are going to be turning to Romans chapter 13 for our main text this morning. We'll be revisiting a main text we have been using for the past 3 weeks, and it is going to be the first seven verses of chapter 13. And chapter 13, verse 1 starts with, "Let every soul be subject unto the higher powers, for there is no power but of God. The powers that be are ordained of God. Whosoever therefore resisteth the power resisteth the ordinance of God, and they that resist shall receive to themselves damnation. For rulers are not a terror to good works, but to the evil. Wilt thou then not be afraid of the power? Do that which is good, and thou shalt have praise of the same. For he is the minister of God to thee for good. But if thou do that which is evil, be afraid. For he beareth not the sword in vain, for he is the minister of God, a revenger to execute wrath upon him that doeth evil. Wherefore ye must needs be subject, not only for wrath, but also for conscience' sake. For this cause pay ye tribute also, for they are God's ministers, attending continually upon this very thing. Render therefore to all their dues, tribute to whom tribute is due, custom to whom custom, fear to whom fear, honor to whom honor." Brother Don Pulford, will you pray for our Sunday school class this morning? So, we are continuing the application of being a living sacrifice and having the mind of Christ and demonstrating his fruit in our interactions with God, with ourselves, with his body, and now with the higher powers. Now, I don't know about you, but I am looking forward to Tuesday being done. I will say, as I have in previous weeks, I am not telling you how to vote. I'm not telling you which way to think. I'm not telling you which way to lean. I'm also not telling you to vote your conscience. I know that seems strange, but there are millions of people hearing that message, vote your conscience. And we as Christians shouldn't be voting our conscience. We should be looking to him what he wants. So, if your conscience isn't his, please don't vote your conscience. If anything in our life that we pray about and fast about and seek his face, it should be about the authority that he will appoint over us. And I will also say, as I do believe strongly in the importance of our performing our civil duty and voting. If you don't, you have zero reason to complain about anything. You're either in the game or you're on the sideline. Bleachers are full of people who think they're all pro. Not the case. All right, so the other thing that I'll say is, getting into discussion of government in time of voting was absolutely not my idea. So if anybody thinks that this was my genius idea to get into this at this exact time, absolutely not. My only thing was I felt that we were told to go through Romans in Sunday school. I am not smart enough to plan 70 lessons ahead that, oh, this is going to align perfectly with this season. I would love to say it's a happy coincidence for me, but it's not. It's because God has all things under his control. And as I've said in previous weeks, my feet have been stepped on many, many, many times and will continue to be. Mostly because we have been raised to be proud of being a rebellious people. That's the lesson we have been taught in school, is we are rebellious, we are independent, we can do whatever we want. And when you look back through history, that is not the case. It was not rebellion. Go look it up for yourself. I'm not a historian that can go through and actually explain it to you. But I can tell you for a fact, we weren't rebellious. The responsibility was skipped. They decided no longer to take responsibility for us. But I also say, as a nation who was founded upon the principles of God, would not be the principles of God if it was started in rebellion. because rebellion does not work. Never has. And also, going along with this is we know that God establishes the authority. If he has all power, if we truly know, but also believe, because we know things and don't actually believe it. We have a habit of storing knowledge on a bookshelf and saying, oh, I absolutely know it, and then when it comes time to actually saying we believe it, we don't. We leave it on a shelf. But all power is his, and therefore, if all power is his, the only way anyone else has any authority is if he determines it's appropriate. And we are told that we are required to be subject to his authority. If he has all authority, that means we have zero. And we have a responsibility and duty to be submitted to that authority. So if he decides to establish powers in between, that is his prerogative, and our responsibility to be obedient doesn't change. We also know that his works are perfect. All his ways are perfect. And when he gave Israel a king, and we looked at this in previous weeks, he didn't give them a horrible system. He warned them what the king would do in the system that he established, but he did establish a working system that required authority to be submitted to him. And we looked at how the warning was the manner of men. You ever hear that phrase, is power corrupts, ultimate power corrupts ultimately? Well, power does corrupt men. And we've seen that in the kings, many kings. And the one, and I'm going to just say the one good king that had his heart, David, even when he was anointed, we saw his example where Saul was chasing him, and he, if anybody, he would say, I have the responsibility because I've been anointed king, so obviously that means the old king's out. And David repented of saying, I didn't submit to the authority by doing what I did. And we can look at all the kings through 1 and 2 Kings and God's promises to these kings when they were anointed that if you do what I tell you to, I will establish your kingdom, I will establish your throne if you serve me. And they didn't. See, authority is not designed to be a terror to good, and we looked at this last week. It is not designed to be a terror. And I can tell you, that is contrary to my thinking. I want to be left alone. No, I'm serious. I want to be left alone. That's how I want to do things. I want to have a home. I want to establish it. I want to provide for my family. And I want to do so without being underneath anybody else's thumb. Isn't it great how we can sugarcoat rebelliousness? I don't want anybody to tell me what to do. I want to do those things. Is any of the things that I said, is any of that desire a bad thing, to have a home and to have a family and to provide for them? Absolutely not, but when the mindset goes to, I don't want anybody to tell me what to do, careful. But authority is designed not to be a terror, it was designed for good, and we saw that with the promises. First and foremost, in order for authority to know what is good and right, they have to know what is good and right. If they are designed for good, they have to know what good is. And you can't know what good is if you don't know who good is. The principal foundation for any authority is that authority is required to know who God is. It is the foundation of everything. We are to know him. But I can tell you, authority will not behave in a consistent manner with God if they don't know God. And we can see in the interactions in Daniel with Nebuchadnezzar and King Darius, where God uses his people to show the authority who he is. And we see the example of those princes behaving appropriately. and being subject to that authority, but not to the point that they're willing to give up their responsibility to God to submit to the king. I wish that when authority didn't handle the responsibility, that we were let off the hook to do whatever we want. That is not the case. We are still required to do the right thing, even when authority doesn't. And it says the higher power wields the sword. By saying they wield the sword not in vain, they obviously wield the sword, which means they have the authority to use that sword in judgment. How about you? There's only one judge that I want, and that's because he's merciful and he knows how to wield it. I don't want authority that doesn't know him because they don't know how to wield his sword of judgment. But regardless of it, we are to be subject to them. And we are to do good to avoid the judgment. You know, if we just use the phrasing, if we throw off the shackles of our government, we are rejecting the authority that God has established. And if we are rejecting his authority, we are rebellious. We no longer have the mind of Christ. But you don't understand the offenses that they're doing. And we looked at the example of God. If there was anybody that have come down here and said, this authority that is established means nothing, I am God, this is all mine, absolute right. He was called faultless, and yet he was still punished, and he opened not his mouth. And this is where we pick up our lesson today in verses 6 and 7. Sorry, a lot of my discomfort is I just don't like it. And I'm going to sadistically enjoy the fact that you're not going to like this very shortly. Sorry. Because verse 6 starts, says, for this cause pay ye tribute also. The only thing that's certain is death and taxes, right? Who enjoys taxes? Well, if you make a career in it, absolutely. But I don't like paying taxes. And if you like them, do you like paying extra? Like if you know you're getting a return, do you say, hey, just keep it? It's on me. Where can I send more? I have no problem with you sending more, and I think it's a great idea. But I don't want to send any more. There is a whole system based upon how much do you know to determine how much tax you're going to get back. And it's established to be complicated for a reason, so that way you pay more. But I'm not going to go any further than that. You can talk to our accountants. Yes, I'm an accountant, but I'm going to distance myself from this one. Because of this preceding section, that for theirs, for this cause, because they are established by God, because they are established for your good, because they wield the sword, because they have judgment upon people, because the authority is set above you and we are commanded to obey it, for this cause, pay ye tribute also. Told you you're not going to like it either. I warned you. For this cause pay ye tribute. Well, sure, I'll be gladly to pay them the wages that they're worth. If they do a good job, then I'll be more than happy to pay them the wages that they deserve. That's great, except for that word tribute is not the word wages. It is a different Greek word. Does anybody have any issue with paying someone for the worth of the work that they do? Absolutely not. I mean, I want to get a great deal. That's why we have multiple contractors come out and look at stuff. But when someone does something, they're worthy of the wage that they earn. But we don't have that loophole either. That word tribute is a fulfillment of what is owed. Not what is earned. Wages, or I know this is not the pronunciation, but all I see is ops onion. And that's how it's spelled, a soldier's pay. It's derived from rations. It means what is earned, a hireling's pay. But a tribute isn't. A tribute is a just due. A tribute is a right of the station. I don't like it. I mean, I like it if it's my station, because then it's my, you owe it to me, because this is an obligation of the station. Now, my intent is not to preach about this morning, but I will bring it up. It is the same thing as a tithe. A tithe is due to him because of who he is, because of his position. A tithe is not a wage. We might pay wages out of tithes, but a tithe is not wages. A tithe is a responsibility because of what he has done and what he has provided. It is a tribute to him because it is what's owed, period. Sorry, I feel very awkward about this because I'm not pastor, so I don't mean to beat the sheep. Please don't take it as beating the sheep here. This is just the teaching that's here. Paying tithes is a requirement because of who he is. Paying tithes is not because it's a wages due to our pastor. It is a requirement of who we are. It is a requirement to show our subservience to who God is and that he provides. It is not a choice. Sorry, I don't like this anymore, and I do not like bringing this up because I feel this is a pastoral thing, but this is part of what the message is. It is a requirement of being in his body. It is a just due, and it is part of being in his body and having the mind of Christ and submitting to his authority. Luke 20, 20 through 25, and they washed him, and they sent forth spies which should feign themselves just men, that they might take hold of his words, and so they might deliver him unto the power and authority of the governor. These people weren't asking an honest question. They were there to try and slip him up and take his words and manipulate it. They were trying to come with him with a yes, no question and just answer it yes or no. And they asked him, saying, Master, we know that thou sayest and teachest rightly, and acceptest thou the person of any, but teachest the way of God truly. Let me butter you up. We know what you say is right. We know that you're a good teacher. And you know what? If I was the person, I'd be like, absolutely, keep giving me those praises. If you tell me how smart I am, my wisdom, I'm going to just be like, absolutely, I'd be love to answer your question. But that's my mind. That's not the mind of Christ saying, okay, so enough of the flattering, get to your point. We know you're a wonderful teacher. And they're not wrong. He is. Is it lawful for us to give tribute to Caesar or no? You know, it's funny, the way you ask a question really reveals a lot more of your mindset than you think. My children have a very unique way of asking a question. Dad, can I have a cookie or no? And I'm like, you're trying to put me on a defensive. Am I being a bad guy because my answer is going to be no? Dad, are you a good dad? or no? And it's the way it's asked. I mean, I get it. My children are philosophical. They live underneath a sarcastic regime, so they understand how these things are. So I fully get it, and I know I applaud their uniqueness here, but it's like, I get what you're saying, and this is here. Are you saying that we should give this stuff to Caesar, or no? Where do you stand on this? The question really comes down to this is, I wish I had the ability to bring this into a different, so I will do this as choppily as I can and try and make it as simple as possible. If you're interested, Alfred Endersheim does a great job talking about this in the Sketches of Jewish Culture, I believe it's called, and also the Life and Times of Jesus Christ the Messiah. He does a great job talking about the background culture behind this, but the question really comes down to this is, do we pay tribute? And by paying tribute, are we accepting the authority of Caesar and rejecting the authority of God? That was their question. I'm not going to say it was their misunderstanding because they were crafty, they were spies, they were looking to catch him, but they basically said is, you're a man of God, but do we accept the authority of Caesar and pay only him tribute, and therefore do we reject who God really is? If you say, yes, we pay. But if you say we shouldn't pay, you're riling up against Caesar, and we gotcha, because now you're being rebellious. We're going to put you in a situation that you're either saying that we either pay him, and you're rejecting God, or you're rejecting God and paying him. Which one is it? Which master is it? Oh, smart, wise teacher. And I don't mean that as a rejection upon God, but this is the mindset of the spies that were sent in there to ask this question. We gotcha. Yes or no, which one is it? It says, but he perceived their craftiness and said to them, why tempt ye me? Shew me a penny, whose image and subscription hath it? And they answered and said, Caesar's. And he said unto them, rend them therefore unto Caesar's the things which be Caesar's, and unto God the things which be God's. Let me ask this another way. Whose inscription is on you? We are created in his image. So who should be rendered unto God? Whose image do we have? We are made in his image, and therefore we should be rendered unto him. And the things of this world that tribute that coin, it's got Caesar's, and it's under his authority. You give it to him. You give him the things that are his, but you are God's. There is no conflict with you paying to government what is government's. We think that we can be rebellious to the government that has been established and not be rebellious to him. We think that these things are in conflict, and that's what they tried doing, is they tried making it in conflict, but there is no conflict because God knew who was in control. He established the authorities. And he said, your image is God's. This stuff is his. For they are God's ministers, it says in Romans 13. God has established them for his purpose. You mean I have to admit that government is God's ministers? Haven't you met them? Well, that doesn't matter. You know, because the problem is, and this is the problem for our flesh, is that I've said this in weeks before, we read it for what our responsibility is when we see him. First and foremost, it reveals who he is, and then it reveals our responsibility to him. And it is not for you to take this and say, this is their responsibility. I know that seems odd, being that we're going over the responsibility of government here, but is your understanding that they are responsible to him, and it doesn't change our responsibility to him? They are public servants for the good of the people at the costs of themselves. Let me make it person. More personable. I am a husband and I am a father. But I am also the man, Phil. I have my own thoughts, I have my own desires, I have my own picture, I have my own thing that I want to do with my life. But I have a mantle of responsibility as a husband, and I have a mantle of responsibility as a father. What I'm going to say now is not for pity. It is not for sympathy. I don't need that. I don't want that. This is just telling you how it is. My back hurts all the time because it was fused. My body hurts. I know most of you, and I'm speaking to the men. I'm sorry, ladies. I don't have your mind. But men, I know we have hurts that we carry, and we carry it quietly. I personally, when I hurt, I say it's worth it because what it means is it allowed me to have a new career that allows me to provide for my children. Yes, I don't enjoy the pain, but for me, not a prideful thing, but when I hurt, I know that it was for the good of my family, and as a husband and father, I can't help but think of myself as a resource that is to be used to provide for them. So as a man, I carry the scars and the pain, knowing that I am a resource to be used, and by being used, I have provided for my family. I have provided for my responsibilities. And I know that sounds prideful and vain, and I don't mean it to be. It's just the fact. And I wish that that mindset was in all of authority. That the mantle of authority placed upon the higher powers is to be used as a resource for the benefit for his people. And if we would all get the mindset of being resources for his kingdom and realize we are used for his benefit, for the benefit of his people, then we start seeing what it means to be a proper servant for a good master. For the good of the people at the cost of themselves. Attending continually upon this very thing. And it speaks to the continual call of the higher power. They are to give themselves to perform God's work. Render therefore to all their dues. Render, meaning yield or pay, the ministers of God for your good. It is God's work, and we are to support it, and we support it by rendering ourselves under the chain of authority he establishes. It is our debt, but it is their due. It is not earned, it is their due. And part of that is the authority's responsibility in collecting this to perform God's work. That means for authority, it is not for self-enrichment. Again, I don't speak this for us to be rallied behind it, but it is the requirement of authority. It is not for us to wield the sword to judge. God will judge, but authority is not for them to enrich themselves. Authority is given to enrich the people under them. And our government is supposed to be by the people, for the people. Not for the government, for its people. But because of all these things, because of the system that has been established, because it's been established by him, first of all, we have to talk about taxes. Tribute to whom tribute is due. You know, most of the countries where the gospel was preached at this time was under Roman rule, and therefore they were part of Roman provinces, and being under that was the requirement to pay tribute. Because of Rome being in control, you're paying. Now, there's a couple ways you can think about it. You can think about it as they're an invader. I can't believe I have to pay this. What good are they doing me? Or the mindset is they are the authority, and them being here are there for my good. If I am a province of Rome, that means when trouble comes from an outside source, and it does, Rome is going to be there to protect its province, protect its good. I am not naive enough to think that humans are good and that individuals weren't terrors and all this kind of stuff, but it doesn't, again, it doesn't reject our responsibility. But they were there to take care of. And I know a lot of it says, well, Phil, you're speaking in hypotheticals. No, I'm speaking about the system that God ordained. And that tribute was annual taxes on houses, lands, persons. And then it's also custom to whom custom. Taxes on occasional transactions. Mercantile. We'd call it a sales tax. You don't understand, Lord. I already pay tithes. Now I'm paying tribute. And now you're saying I have to pay custom too? Where's my cut, Lord? No, I established this for your good. This is what's required. You know, yeah, why not? You know, we think we're unique in how much we get taxed. We really do. And we want to say, oh, we threw stuff in the Boston Harbor. We threw a lot of tea in there because it was a 2% tax. Well, go look through history and see how much taxation there really was. Go look at taxation in other parts of the world where it's 50% of your pay is immediately taxed. Now, I'm not speaking on behalf of taxes. Again, I hate them. I can't stand them. There's a lot of things that God tells me to do that, quite frankly, I'm not in alignment with him, so I get a little ornery and agitated and say, God, I don't get your system, I don't like it, and it stinks. And his response is typically, okay. And? It's my system or it's not. And I wish it stopped there, just paying taxes, just pay tribute whom tribute and custom whom custom, but it doesn't. Now, I have to obey them, sure. I have to obey the authority, I got to pay for it, it's meant for my good, and I'm going to do good anyways. But it goes on a little bit further, just in case you thought there's a loophole here. Fear to whom fear? Now, I'm going to say is, you have fear to whom fear and honor to whom honor, and I'm going to say from my perspective, there's two things here. There's the internal factor, and there's an external factor involved. Remember, we like making Christianity a checklist. We don't want to make it an actual lifestyle. We want to make it a lifestyle that we can do things, and then we can think a different way. I love Romans, mostly, when it suits what I think. But then there's things here where it says, fear to whom fear, which means our thought. It's phobos. It means our behavior coupled with terror. Now, it doesn't mean running and hiding and just because it's a spider, someone come in here and kill the spider. I hate it. But fear is an appropriate response to power. It's our way of thinking. And the only way that I keep thinking is going back to Esther. Esther was the queen. She was pleasing to the king. The king loved her. And still she said, before I go in front of him, you pray because I am going before the king. And if he says, that's it. And if he is unhappy, hopefully death is the only thing that he's unhappy to do. Because there's things far worse than death. I am going to go before authority. And whatever they determine is a right response is okay because they're authority. Esther, knowing what her standing was to him as a husband, understood her standing before the king. And that mindset of saying is, I understand the authority and that I'm going to behave appropriately. Romans 3, 9 through 18 says, what then? Are we better than they? No, and no wise, for we have before proved both Jews and Gentiles that they are all under sin. As is written, there is none righteous, no, not one. There is none that understandeth, there is none that seeketh after God. They are all gone out of the way, they together become unprofitable. There is none that doeth good, no, not one. Their throat is an open sepulchre. With their tongues they have used deceit. The poison of asps is under their lips, whose mouth is full of cursing and bitterness. Their feet are swift to shed blood. Destruction and misery are in their ways, and the way of peace have they not known. There is no fear of God before their eyes. All these behaviors they do because they don't have the fear of God. When dealing with authority, if we truly have fear of authority, and again, not the shaking ooh-ah, but if you don't have his fear in your mind, your behavior will never come into control. Remember, it's behavior coupled with terror, or a better term, respect. Our behavior based upon terror or respect. How do you behave with certain knowledge? Proper thinking. Fear to whom fear. And then honor to whom honor. And this is the external. Honor is respect due to persons of distinction, proper price or sum placed upon them. Now, we can have fear, we can change the way we think, but honor is more than that too. Honor is our outward show of appreciation. 1 Timothy 1:17 says, now unto the King, eternal, immortal, invisible, the only wise God, be honor and glory forever and ever. Amen. 1 Timothy 6:12-16 says, fight the good fight of faith, lay hold on eternal life, whereunto thou art also called and hast professed a good profession before many witnesses. I give thee charge in the sight of God, who quickeneth all things, and before Christ Jesus, who gave Pontius Pilate witness a good confession, that thou keep his commandments without spot, unrebukable unto the appearing of the Lord Jesus Christ, which in his times he shall shew who is the blessed and only potentate, the King of kings and Lord of lords, who only hath immortality, dwelling in the light which no man can approach unto, whom no man hath seen nor can see, to whom be honor and power everlasting. Amen. In Romans 12:10, be kindly affectioning one to another with brotherly love, in honor preferring one another. In respect, in action, preferring one another. Honoring. Recognizing the price that he has paid for them. Recognizing the price that he has put upon the authority he has established. Not just your thinking, but recognizing that he establishes it. Told you you weren't going to like this. You know, yes, we are 3 days away from hopefully hearing the end of it, but I want to address a behavior that we have. We're going to hear it from anybody, regardless. Well, they're not my government. Bumper stickers, t-shirts, everything. Even when sworn into office, we're going to hear, well, they're not my this, they're not my that, they're not my. No, they are. Regardless of your feeling, either way, they are your government, they are your higher power, and just because you don't like it, again, that does not forbid us or does not stop us from paying our tribute. It does not stop us from paying our custom. It doesn't take out the responsibility for honoring them and fearing them. So let me say fear, respect. If your candidate doesn't win, they are still established by God, worthy of honor and respect and tribute because of the office they hold. And it does not alleviate us from the responsibility of praying good for them. It does not allow us to become independent citizens of our own nation. We are subject to their authority because he is, period. And I don't mean he is subject, it's just he is everything. He is authority. I hope we all come to the place where we talked about last week, where Daniel in the lion's den, his first comment is, "How dare you get me out of here?" is, "O King, live forever." Do we truly have a Christian mindset when it comes to our government? We have to. And we have to have it now. Because if we follow the trajectory of Rome, which there's a lot of, it's another good study. There's a lot of good studies you should do. But if you take a look at Rome in the U.S., there's a lot of blatant similarities of the rise and where we are now. At some point, we will be considered enemies more publicly by all parties. And if we don't have the mind of Christ with the government now, with authority now, we will never have it. If we never have that proper relationship, then we don't have proper relationship with our God. And we have no hope of making a difference. We want to stand upon, if my people are called by my name, will humble themselves and pray. That means in your current circumstances with the authority over you. If we don't have that mindset in us, then it's a complete and total waste because you've missed the boat. I told you, I don't like this. And I'm keeping reminding you because I'm right there where you are because I see the looks on your face. Don't worry, there'll be coffee soon. So what is required of us? Obedience to God also requires obedience to authority, but that also means accepting whatever the cost is when there is a difference. And to clarify that, it doesn't mean we go along with the government when it's opposite to what God, the supreme authority, has declared. But even when there is a difference and we accept it, we show love and we pay what is due to the authorities, not just in taxes, but in our actions and thoughts with them. I I think it's the same question that I've had in previous weeks, but are we truly obedient to Him? Pastor, will you pray a closing for us?